Julian, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here. Now, the bombing in Pakistan that killed more than 70 people, what do we know about those behind it?
Well, that's it's a tragic event, what we've seen in Pakistan. And I think when we talk about these bombings in places like Pakistan or in Brussels, we have to acknowledge that there are other bombings and terrorist attacks going on at the same time in places like Turkey. And we've got similar sorts of attacks happening in Nigeria and other areas. So the media often, you know, focuses on one as opposed to others. And sometimes it seems almost arbitrary to people why one terrorist attack is being elevated as a story and others aren't. So, you know, when I talk about this, I like to mention and acknowledge the other events that are going on around the world. But what we know about this attack in Pakistan is that it was motivated, it seems, by a group who identified as a splinter group from the Pakistani Taliban, and they were really trying to focus on Christians. So they were trying to ignite a sectarian or religious conflict in Pakistan, and it's really quite upsetting because Pakistan as a country has been really deeply divided and is coming increasingly torn apart by violent extremism and by these sorts of sectarian and religiously motivated attacks. And something's been getting worse in recent years.
And as you say there, with the acknowledgements of these kind of attacks, this attack targeting Christians, and yet the majority of those killed by the actual bombing were Muslims. A pretty typical situation, it would seem.
Well, that's right. And again, when we talk about terrorist attacks as Westerners as non-Muslims, we often forget, perhaps, or we don't know. You know, in the first place, the media doesn't tell us that around the world, by far the greatest number of victims everywhere are Muslims. And the far greater number of people who are killed and maimed and families that are torn apart by terrorist attacks in Asia or Africa or the Middle East are, of course, Muslims. And by far the greatest number of people who are upset and worried about groups like Al-Qaeda and the so-called Islamic State, you know, are again Muslims. And so, you know, certainly this is the other side of this debate that sometimes, again, you don't hear as much about in Western media as you might like to, that sort of common sympathy that can emerge between victims. You know, we're victims of terrorist attacks, Muslims are victims of terrorist attacks. You know, there should be a common sympathy there, a common attempt to try and understand why these are going on and address them. Mm. And so that certainly is happening. And it's great, Sean, I think, that you're acknowledging that on radio.
Mm. Well, just furthering the point a little bit, an opinion piece in the Washington Post was speaking about Pakistan, even after making considerable strides in the last couple of years, had been too tolerant of terrorists. What do you make of that?
Well, Pakistan is an extraordinarily complicated country. It's a place I know quite well. I'm actually going to be in Pakistan next week. Pakistan began its life shearing itself off from India as a Muslim majority nation with the British leaving the subcontinent. So it really began as an attempt to provide a homeland for the Muslims of the Indian subcontinent. But in its original legal framework for the country, it made provisions to protect and to you know, to look after minorities, you know, Hindus and Christians and Muslim minorities as well. And so it's always attempted to be a pluralistic nation, even though it is ruled under a form of Islamic Sharia law. Pakistan, however, has been caught up in a very dangerous neighborhood and hasn't always made the great decisions in terms of terrorist organizations. And so I think it's a pretty much an acknowledged open secret to everybody. Mm. That during the 80s and the 90s, Pakistan supported extremist terrorist organizations that it could then use to try and pressure its neighbors. So one example of that is the Mujahideen, who fought the Soviets in Afghanistan, and that they were supported not just by Pakistan, but by the Americans, mm-hmm. by their allies, and by many others to try and fight the Soviets. Of course, in supporting them and creating them and arming them, they were really supporting and creating and arming a form of militant jihadist Islam. And part of that, a small part of that, went on to become Al-Qaeda. Also, Pakistan for years has supported, and some would even say operated and run, similar sorts of jihadist groups to operate in Kashmir. Kashmir is disputed territory between India and Pakistan. Now, what happens, and this is a phenomenon we've seen around the world many times, when states decide to covertly sponsor terrorist organizations across their borders, again and again, history shows that it's very much short-term thinking. You know, you can create these shadow armies and build them up with arms and training and ideologies to go out there and fight your enemy covertly. But they tend then to bounce back, blow back against you. And Pakistan's really seen that for a long time. There's been a discussion of sort of a tacit agreement or point of view in Pakistan for many years about the Taliban, saying there's good Taliban and bad Taliban. The good Taliban are the guys who do what we want, and the bad Taliban are the guys who don't do what we want. But the basic reality of dealing with these terrorist organizations and these sort of covert groups is that you can't control them. It's like letting a genie out of the bottle. Once you let it out, you're not quite sure what it's going to do, and it may well come back and bite you.
Mm. Now, just turning our attention to the Brussels bombings now, the investigations have come under fire. Brussels police had only one suspect in custody who they were forced to let go. Were there operational issues on the day of the bombings and in the aftermath that are now hampering investigations?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of criticism of the Brussels authorities, the Belgian authorities, around how they're handling these counterterrorism operations. Belgium's got a very difficult situation, really, when it comes to violent extremism, because statistically, it seems that the vast majority of foreign fighters come out of Western Europe in going to Syria and Iraq. You know, the much larger number of them come out of Belgium for its size than any other Western European nation, pretty much. It seems that the Islamic communities who live in Belgium and who are Belgian, it seems that there is a higher level of dissatisfaction and anger. Mm. Still minorities, of course, very small numbers. The vast majority of Muslims living in Belgium, like anywhere else, are law-abiding, hard-working citizens. But it seems that in Belgium there's more of a problem than there might be in some other Western European nations, and so problems around, you know, what they call assimilation of migrants and so on, communities. And their counterterrorism police and intelligence forces have been criticized for not sharing information amongst themselves as well as they might, not being able to engage in the sort of surveillance operations to the degree to which American partners and others might wish that they did. And also, you know, arresting the wrong person,
and on
really flimsy evidence, and then having to let him go, and you know that third bomber or terrorist from the attacks in the airport is apparently now still at large in Belgium, and of course, you know, when we look at that Paris attack some time back, that cell was also operating out of Belgium. So yeah, there does seem to be some inadequacy of the Belgian police and intelligence forces, and to some degree this makes its European neighbours nervous, because of course the EU, you know, it's a sort of a halfway federated organisation where you have, you know, open borders and open trade, but you don't really have common police or intelligence or defence forces, and so these sorts of incidents, you know, do make European states, you know, more and more nervous around, well, you know, how can we collectively protect ourselves, you know, if one member or a few of our members are not as competent as others, you know, how can we put in place, you know, better processes.
An intriguing point there, Julian. We'll have to leave it there, but thank you very much. Do appreciate your time coming on this morning, having a bit of a chat with us about these couple of very tragic events.
No way, Sean. Cheers.